Welcome to the Earn First podcast. This is Arun Sudhaman, founding editor of Earn First, and I'm very happy to be joined today by the CEO of SPAG Fin Partners, Mr. Aman Gupta. Aman, welcome.
No, thank you, Arun. Thanks for having me, and very excited to have this conversation with you.
This is the second in the two-part podcast series that Fin Partners is sponsoring around Praxis Asia Pacific, which of course took place, feels like another lifetime, but was only, I think, 3 weeks ago now.
Yes.
Many themes emerged from the event. We discussed some of them with your colleague, James Brasher from RiceFin a couple of weeks ago. But I think for this episode, Aman, you in particular wanted to talk about the changing nature of influence, the rise of influencers and creators. I think there was plenty of attention afforded to that topic at Praxis, particularly in terms of the challenges it poses to traditional communications functions. But let me start by kind of getting your views on how you see the whole influencer landscape changing, particularly in terms of healthcare and technology.
So Arun, thanks for bringing this topic up. Let's sort of look at healthcare and technology, the two things which kind of are so interwoven in our lives. The biggest factor which matters there is the trust and credibility. At SPAG Fin, we have been talking about the trust as a core factor when you're doing the messaging through credible messengers since the time we launched SPAG in 2014. And this whole idea of how do you ensure that we work with the right set of individuals who have both the credibility and have a subject matter expertise to really take that content, take that data, take that story to the larger audience is the core to anything which we are doing. So on the one side, we are seeing a lot of content creators coming up across the ecosystem. You have nano, micro, macro, whatever we may be calling it. And they usually are defined by the number of followers. You know, that's the kind of the basic thumb rule which people look into. However, is that really what works in this sector? The answer is no. What we really need to look at is, are these people have their subject matter expertise to act as a credible voice on that subject? Are they transparent in the way they are engaging with their own audiences? Are they within the regulatory and compliance ecosystem of the geography in which they are operating? And so on and so forth. So that was kind of one of the core thoughts which we had. And based on that, in the recent few weeks back, we launched Finfluence, which is our proprietary tool with which we can work with our clients and the larger players in the health and technology ecosystem to ensure that we work with, I would say, content creators who have all the necessary five steps or the five elements which we think really make them the best suited to be the voice for a brand, voice for a topic, or voice for a particular theme.
And those five metrics are signal, compliance, overlap, relevance, and engagement.
Yes, that's what we call is kind of a score. It's like it's the score which we will try to bring in. And if you just go a little deeper dive, right? So if you look at what we call is a signal quality, it's about that content creators' authenticity, consistency, and the richness of the content. So that's one part of it. The second, as we look at from a compliance and authority, is that is the person disclosing, who is funding or sponsoring those posts, and do they have the relevant qualifications and the regulatory ecosystem to talk on that subject? Do their audience overlap with the audience of the brand or the topic which we are doing? Because we do not want somebody who is talking to an audience which is completely away from the audience which brand would like to talk to. And is the narrative are the relevance of the content aligned with what we, what the campaign objectives are? And finally, you know, does, it's not just about saying how many likes you get, but is it really initiating a conversation? Is it really bringing in a meaningful and thoughtful replies, which is the part which for us makes the most important thing? It's not saying, oh, I have a million likes on the topic and the conversation is having about something very different from our, you know, from the topic which you would like to do. I think these are the elements which become very critical in a both health, technology, and anything which I would say has a high involvement with the consumer.
I guess it's particularly relevant in healthcare because it's a regulated industry. Different countries have different regulations. For a pharma company, I imagine it's quite important to ensure that, you know, they're finding influencers who aren't breaking rules. But do you find perhaps that, you know, there's almost like an inverse correlation? The more popular a healthcare influencer is, maybe the less likely they are to be adhering to regulations and rules. Is that potentially a challenge?
Okay. So I think what's happened is that I think the influencers have understood the need for them to be more compliant. So while what you're saying may be true in the past, the whole landscape is changing. And when we say healthcare influencers, it's not a one homogeneous group. A healthcare influencer could be somebody who is a fitness expert. He could be somebody who is a medical professional, and you can't sort of put them in the same bucket. You know, if I'm talking about, say, for example, one of the biggest health conversation nowadays is about obesity. Now, obesity can have a conversation which is related to your lifestyle element, you know, from a fitness to your nutrition. Now, that's something which a nutritionist or a fitness expert could talk about. But if you would like to talk about the pharmacotherapeutics of it, then those are not the people who can speak on that particular subject. That's where you need an expert, a certified medical practitioner who understands the science, who understands the compliance, who also understands that you can't go and sell. What you are doing is you're educating and asking the person to take a more informed decision, and based on the data, based on the person's condition, then the healthcare professional are the best people to advise what would be the right, the treatment which they can, should probably go with.
Yeah. And do you think the clients are, in general, sophisticated enough? Because, you know, there's always that temptation, I suppose, to just select the influencer with the biggest reach, the biggest audience, you know, the biggest name. It's very tempting, right?
If
you're in control of those budgets.
Exactly. And I think that has been the kind of the core thinking right now. You know, whenever in the past we had talked to the clients, their ask would be, give us the, you know, what's the follower ecosystem? And when we say follow, they're just looking for the numbers. There is no qualitative methodology which used to be asked for. So if the person has a background which to some extent could be classified as health, and second is if the person is popular, those are the two factors which I'm comfortable with. I'm going to put the budgets behind it. But what we realized was, and we used to sort of, you know, go along that path along with the clients, right? So we were not sort of questioning that thinking. But what we realized was that in a couple of campaigns, the impact was not coming in. So while we were spending the money working with those influencers, but if we are looking for a behavioral change, if that is something which is kind of one of our main impact, where we are asking the person, let's say, for, you know, so if you're working, say, in a diabetes ecosystem, and you would like the person to go and do a regular check for diabetes, right? So every morning I will go and do my check. Is that happening? The answer was no. Despite the fact that if you just look at from the simple metrics, from a million followers, you had 5% of people who liked the post. There was a conversation, but those conversation will be, if it's a celebrity, about the celebrity's social life. It will be about celebrity's recent doings and nothing to do with the topic. And I think that's where the need for Finfluence came in, that as a specialist healthcare marketing communication agency, it's our responsibility to bring something which could act as a filters, which can act as a tool for both the sides to say, is this really the right person? So it's not about the size only. It's also about expertise, credibility, the trust which that person could bring in. Also, the fact that the person is then providing the right kind of an education and sensitization to the audiences.
Yeah. I guess the metrics as well are really important from an outcomes perspective too, right? As you've just mentioned, you know, you can have a lot of impressions and a lot of likes, but it's potentially not generating the actual outcomes you want, if it's, you know, specific tests or if it's awareness around a particular issue. Do you see that being linked more now to influencer investment, more specific
metrics? I think so, because, so let's look into who has the budget for influencer. If it is coming from a communication department, then the metrics largely still remains from a communication perspective, which is your likes and engagement and conversations. But in our ecosystem, we're largely dealing with the marketing folks, right? For marketing folks, they are sort of saying, what can this dollar investment give it to me in return? So therefore, it has to have certain outcomes, which could be linked to what our core objectives are. And therefore, influencer is not a standalone thinking. It's not a campaign which sort of works in its own silo and is standalone. It is a part of the larger digital and social campaigns which we are running. So therefore, the idea would be that from there, if we are doing this campaign, it has to have a call to action, which takes a person on a particular journey to know more on that topic, to do a more deeper dive about the subject which we are talking, and get further information to take the right informed decisions. So it's not just like a one step. It's part of a journey. This is one of the steps in overarching journey to make people more informed so that they can really change their lives and, you know, have more healthier options, or, you know, have better diagnosis, talk to the doctors about, you know, what the new innovations can really help them in a particular condition which they may be suffering with.
And on the technology side, I imagine you don't have the same regulatory pressure, perhaps, but it's just as important, no doubt, to be working with, you know, to have the same kind of lens, I guess, in terms of credibility and compliance. Are there different factors around compliance when we're talking about tech sector clients?
Well, it's not as, and again, and technology is such a broad ecosystem now. It's not like, you know, you can't sort of say, okay, technology in one way. It depends on what part of the technology are we kind of talking about. So for example, if we're talking about technology from a B2B space, you know, where we're saying a particular technology could play a very critical role in changing a particular industry and its operations, it can make it much more efficient, or it could sort of really change the way the systems are working. In that particular case, you would need a credible voices who has seen the technology at work. So for example, if it's a big a cloud service provider with a particular new technology or tool, which could help, say, a gaming company to become more efficient, or it's sort of saying, I can ensure that your data is stored much more safely. Now, that is where you would need somebody who is an expert in that space, you know, and if it is about security, it's about, say, you need a cybersecurity who has used the product or who has that kind of technical expertise to chime in and say, yes, I think this is where the neo technology can really help. But if you're just bringing a social influencer who is speaking about, say, consumer electronic, and just because it's consumer electronic has a huge reach, that may not kind of work in this case. So it depends on who you're kind of talking to. And yeah. within the consumer electronic, again, then it depends on which consumer electronic am I talking about, because there's some of it. And then extending into, say, the wearables part from where health and technology comes together. How do you get the right people to sort of say, this is really the wearable which could give you the data which you can be sure of and take your decisions based on it. So we have to sort of look at technology and start to segment it to look at who the audiences are. And within that space, do we have the right credible voice? It cannot just happen that a technology influencer can talk about each and everything under the sun.
Yeah. That makes plenty of sense. Let's talk about influencers themselves for a moment, because I think that's always quite interesting, the trends in this area. Any patterns in terms of where they are living and where they are moving to, for example? Are we still talking about, I know, of course, it's market and sector dependent, but in terms of the main channel drivers, are we still talking about Instagram, TikTok? I imagine LinkedIn is important from a B2B perspective. Are you seeing any specific changes in terms of channels?
Well, I think the video content is becoming a bigger, more and more popular, and we can see that kind of getting embedded across all the social channels. So, YouTube Shorts, IG Reels, TikTok. So that's really where the video content is becoming more popular because it's more engaging. That's part one. LinkedIn is becoming a much more bigger play. In the system, which we're seeing, especially in health and technology, where you are looking at a kind of a B2B conversation. It's also more expensive compared to, doing things on a Meta or in a Google ecosystem, much more targeted. So LinkedIn is something which we are seeing more clients asking to explore. But just because of the budgets, there is a little bit of, it's more experimental right now to see what can be done in this space. But yes, it's gaining more kind of a popularity. And despite everything, we're still seeing, X having its own space. I was in conversation with a few clients a couple of weeks back, and it was kind of a learning for me. And we were discussing the role of X in the health side, and they said that's something which a lot of scientific conversations happen. So if you look at scientific publications, they are very active on X, and they keep on putting a more peer-reviewed publications. So for the medical and the scientific community, they do look at X for that kind of a content and that kind of an engagement. Also, conversations which happen on X if there's a conference happening. So that's much more quicker way for them to know what conversations which are happening, get to be part of that conversation. So, so X has, not completely lost. You just need to know where to use it. It's happening there.
It's a very interesting point, because I think in the media world, X has lost a lot of its luster, certainly as a driver of traffic for media organizations. But the numbers are still pretty strong in terms of users. And as you've mentioned, it's also quite market dependent, right? So, you hear a lot about brands coming off X, although I think many have returned. And outside America, or let's say the further you go from Western markets, I do think there seems to be less concern about X, which is kind of an interesting phenomenon.
That's true. So it's not as negative as you might find it happening in the US or some part of Europe.
What about these other networks and channels? Are they becoming important? Some of them are more local language, but presumably you're also looking at WeChat, you look at Line in North Asia, and Kaokao, yeah. Then there's the video one in China. Sorry, the name escapes me. The short video one. I can't remember the name.
Yeah.
But
it is important. I would say more. It is very critical, not just important, because when you get into a specific market, you need to be aware and work with the local channels because they are much more popular. So if I am in Korea. Or if I'm in Japan, I do need to work with Line and Kakao. I can't sort of work with an IG or a Meta ecosystem because they may not be as big or popular. And also then the language matters, right? Because if you have to create then content, then you have to create content in the local languages, work with the local influencers. And the question which you asked in terms of the direction, how the influencers are, the number of influencers are increasing. So you see more and more content creators coming in from areas which otherwise were not there. So we have seen more, say, doctors coming out as a content creators. And we have doctors who have a pretty large reach, and they are senior, say, an orthopedic surgeon. There may be people who are endocrinologists. And they are taking time to use social media as a vehicle to talk to their audiences, educate them, use that as a platform for people to sort of have a better understanding of health and science. So we are seeing that happening, which I think is a good trend because you need more people who have that expertise, which people can, you know, trust for the kind of content, because they will always ensure that they are not going against the local guidelines or against the ethical part of the
medicine. Yeah, absolutely. They've taken an oath, which you can't always say that about some of the wellness influencers out there. And I mean, some of the stuff I've seen, you know, products, various remedies that have been endorsed, I won't even call them products, but, you know, it's not far off kind of quackery, I guess. So the more medical doctors, surely that's a better, an encouraging trend.
Exactly, and that is where it kind of starts to move into the whole space of the misinformation and rumors and disinformation, because that's a very thin line, and that's where the social conversation starts to become important, especially in, as we said, health and tech sector. Because people might just take what's coming up on an Instagram as the truth. So for them to get access to the right people becomes very, very kind of critical. Because if you just go and start looking for, and we see people around, they just take anything which comes on their IG, you know, things that's where it is. And everybody wants to then use it, you know. So because health is becoming important, people want to be well, they want to have a more healthier life, and they're willing to believe everything which is coming on the social media. And therefore, it's responsibility of the brands to take a more visionary and forward-looking thinking. It's not just about business, it's about having a moral responsibility to ensure that there is a more ethical storytelling, a more trustworthy content which is available in social and digital ecosystem, and you know, people can then sort of go to them and get the right information.
Yeah, it makes sense in a way because, you know, I think in Asia especially, medical information hasn't always been as accessible as it could be. And sometimes you do get a kind of a, you know, the doctor knows best attitude. Which I guess when you have influencers, you know, that it sort of provides a very appealing route for people to find out more information, you know, in places where they already are. And,
true.
You know, in such digestible forms. But you're right, the potential for misinformation is very high.
It is exactly. And you know, especially when you have, and I remember when, as SPAG, we worked with WHO during the COVID time, And for us, this was this whole idea of how do you listen in and have a response mechanism for all the misinformation and rumors which were floating around in the early days of COVID across Southeast Asia. And having a robust mechanism was what WH had tasked us to do. And based on that, this whole science of infodemiology came up, which is, you know, how the misinformation can really change the way people think. And we've been seeing that happening, you know, because while science is right, sometimes you have to also understand the emotions of the people. So you have to mix the science with how the people think and how they sort of, what their emotions are, to tell the right story.
Yeah, these are good insights, right? If this is the kind of stuff that people are looking for, then that's a very useful insight for a healthcare company. When it comes to the influencers themselves, how do you think they feel, though, you know, being scored? I've always wondered this. Like, you, I mean, I know you're not going to make these scores public, but they may well find out that they have a score and it's impacting their earning potential. Do you ever think that there's potential backlash from that?
Well, there can be. There could be. You know, if somebody feels that just because of a certain score, which they have scored low on a particular brand, they may feel a little resentful about it. But I think as an organization, our role, and I think that's the role of an influencer, is that by core meaning you're an influencer, you're influencing people's in their thinking, in their behavior, in the way they may act. So from all aspect of being an ethical influencer, you should be speaking on the topic which you are expert on. And in a way, that gives you a better play field, that this is an area where I score higher. So therefore, this is a space which I can then monetize much more bigger number instead of spreading myself across. So it's a way of perspective. For us, this is something which could help and strengthen an influencer to go and talk to a brand saying, because of this score, I am more better suited for you to work along with it. So there is a perspective which they can even work along with us saying, give us a score. And I'm sure at some point of time, they would be very keen to sort of make this course more public so that, you know, the brands know who they should be working with.
It's a bit like scoring agencies. But do you find that influencers in general, because, you know, now there's so many. I mean, it's crazy how the whole landscape. Presumably, there's quite a lot of competition for marketing budgets, I would think. Do you find that influencers are more willing nowadays to kind of work with brands, give up a measure of control? Is it still less controllable than you might like?
I think it's moving towards where the influencers are more willing to co-curate content with the brand and not just becoming saying this is what it is, because they do realize that if they have a better story, which is more engaging, it's good for their own audiences, right? So they are, but it's a work in progress. You still have influencers or influencer ecosystem who believe that this is where I belong. So this is my platform. This is how I am perceived by the people. So therefore, you have to build your brand into my persona and not let's look into kind of a co-curation part of it. But I think because of what you said, the brands are looking at the choices. The choices are much more higher in numbers today compared to what we could have seen maybe even a year and a half, two back. So they do have a sort of saying, okay, if you are not, then we could look for another option. So I think the whole idea is that what's the whole purpose? The purpose is to make the audiences more informed, give them the kind of information which will then make them to take the right decisions. So that really is where the conversation is, and does it benefit both brand and the influencer if they work together?
Yeah. And then lastly, how do you see regulatory regimes keeping up? Do you think, and I know it differs on a country by country basis in Asia, but are lawmakers able to keep up with this kind of proliferation of healthcare information on all these different channels and you know, the risks involved?
I think that really is a very very critical question right now. But you will sort of see a very differentiated economies or markets. In certain markets, the policymakers are taking note that they need to have compliance and regulations which are specific for our social channels and not a one broad marketing regulation where there's an ambiguity of how do you take this into a social channel. Because what they've not been able to differentiate between the different media ecosystem which exists right now. You have a marketing regulations which are taking media as a one homogeneous ecosystem. Now that doesn't work. So from my advertising to my PR to my social media to an influencer to my own channels, each has a very different way the brands work with them. So having a one universal guideline creates more ambiguity. And I think that's where some of the markets we are seeing are trying to find a more, they're trying to sort of give more predictable and more clarity on how it needs to be done. But there are still places which are gray and ambiguous in nature. So that's something which we still, I believe, will take a little bit more time. And you do sort of find places where situations where, despite thinking you are within the regulatory ecosystem, you might be pulled up for something. So, you know, that's where partners like us come in, that, you know, we sort of ensure that we have taken enough kind of a layers to sort of come out with something which would meet all the forensic and the regulatory needs of that particular market.
Yeah, it's very interesting to think you need actual specific guidelines and criteria for some of these social creator channels, right? Compared to mass media, compared to other kinds of information. Okay, last question. Do you have a favorite healthcare influencer?
Actually, no, right now. I don't.
That's good. That's a diplomatic answer.
I don't. Because as I said, for me, as someone who comes more from a pharma and the medtech side, I would like to really have somebody who is able to do justice of talking more from a serious health issues per se and not from a wellness and nutrition side. So that group is still evolving.
Underserved at the moment?
That's very much underserved, very much underserved. Mm. And I'm hoping that as SPAG Fin, we are able to make that group a little bit more bigger and available. So we are collaborating with the HCPs to bring them, you know, outside of their chambers to become the voice. So that's one of the areas which we're currently working under influence.
Yeah, there's quite a preponderance, I guess, in areas like wellness, nutrition, and mental health. Very, very active areas. But I think it's a really good point in terms of pharma and medtech. Yeah, probably less well served. So we'll watch that space closely. Aman, thanks so much for your time. Really enjoyed this conversation with you. And I'm sure we'll have you on the podcast again.
Always.
Yeah.
Thank you, Arun. Pleasure.